quick roll call if you'd like me to.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call, we have Chuck Gomes, Zahid Jamil, Bill Drake, Wolf Ulrich Knoben. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Marco Lorenzoni, Glenn de Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. And if I can please remind everyone to state their names when speaking. And Olga will be late for this call. Thank you. Over to you.
Okay. This is a very typical GNSO call. More staff than members. I'm kidding. Okay, let's go through the document. I've got open on my screen three different versions. One is Chuck's version with my comments, and I've also got two other things that I saw afterwards, Olga's comments, and Wolf has one comment. So shall we just proceed section by section, I presume? The first section is the laying out the timeline, and this, of course, would not be included in whatever we're going to – it's not going to be included in our the document we might send out to members or to applicants, but for our own internal purposes. Let's see. There are a few points of contention we can clarify quickly. I had suggested, Chuck, you had said no later than 10 February to publicly post and distribute the agreed the draft process. I was suggesting we ought to just wait and send that out on the 18th because it seems to me possible that we would cause some confusion if we send out on the 10th something that the council hasn't finalized, which might change. Is nobody else concerned about that?
Well,
I don't feel strongly.
No, Bill, I fully understand your concern, and it is a concern. But if the council's going to approve it on the 18th, it's going to have to be distributed very quickly to the various GNSO groups so that the councilors can get feedback from them to act on the 18th. So I don't know how it's avoidable. Even if we don't distribute it or staff doesn't, we're going to have to ask the councilors to distribute it, and then if they delay, it's going to create problems in the council making a decision on the 18th.
Well, the only point I'm concerned about is if the council ends up not accepting something that we've put in here that's significant and there's a real change, then we have to revert back to everybody and say, hey, by the way, the deal has altered.
I understand the problem, and that's why I think we've got to open it with some disclaimers. But if how else can they, you know, I mean, the whole difficulty with this is it's really hampering our ability to do things in a bottom-up way. But if we don't even get the draft out there, and then the council, how can the councilors make a decision if their groups haven't seen it?
Yeah, well, that's the other problem is how long it's going to take people to No, the councilors should – yeah, you're right. You're right. The councilors need to talk it through with the stakeholder group. So, all right, let's reject my change, and I'll put it back into where Chuck had the point.
Just a process question, Bill. Who's got the pen on this so that we Marika, can you take the pen on this?
Sorry, Chuck. This is Olga. I just joined.
Yeah, Bill's in charge of the meeting, so I just want to make sure everybody knows that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to help, okay? Marika?
Just to confirm, what would you like me to take the pen on?
On inserting the changes that we talk about and agreed, right?
And
I mean, I can do this.
Why don't we use your document, Bill, your red line document? Is that okay?
Yeah.
That's
fine with me.
Yeah.
So I just put your point back into November 10, Chuck, and restored, probably post and distribute the draft process as widely as possible.
Now, are you able to take the pen on this, Bill? I knew you were in kind of an awkward situation. That's why I suggested Marika, but if you're able to do it, that's fine.
Yeah. No, I can.
Okay, good. Okay, never mind, Marika. I'm sorry. I was trying to cover for Bill, who I know he's in a meeting, so...
No, I'm out of the meeting now. I left early and I came home.
Okay.
So I'm good to go. All right. Then under 18 February, I just capitalized the evaluation team, since we're going to refer to it again later, unless somebody has a copy editing problem with that. And other changes here. Okay. I see nothing else in this section. The timeline. Chuck, you had said requests under 6E, requests that the review develop a long-term process for consideration in March or April. I was just wondering how feasible March was going to be given that
April's fine, Bill. I was just throwing something out there.
Okay, that's fine.
Back up, though, to 6B, Bill. That was not really a change, was it? It's highlighted.
No.
Yeah, okay, never mind. Yeah,
it's highlighted?
Well, in mine, it's just in, yeah. I don't know, it looks like it's an insertion there. Okay, that's nothing.
I just capitalized evaluation team under 6C, that's all.
No problem. Go ahead.
All right. So now we get down to the heart of the matter. The proposed one-time process, okay? Endorsement requires. Here's, I think, the fundamental difficulty. Now, Chuck's version was to suggest that you should have a supermajority vote of both houses for any applicant to become a nominee. I personally would have a hard time with that, and I believe NCSG would not support it. And I'm concerned that we would then have a process where people would be asking us to make amendments, and if the amendments don't pass, then to suggesting we shouldn't support the thing, and then it becomes a political football. So, and I think also, bearing in mind what some of the people said, Caroline and others, and Tim, about, you know, each stakeholder group ought to be able to design its own process, and let's be as bottom-up as possible, it struck me as better to suggest that each stakeholder group should be guaranteed to be able to select one nominee if they have a candidate, and then the additional up to two could be split, one from any stakeholder group, if somebody wants to put forward another one, and one from the NCAs, subject to Chuck's rule of a simple majority vote of each house. So my thought was to bifurcate the deal by locking in each stakeholder group gets one, and then the others we vote the way Chuck was suggesting.
So let me make sure I understand, Bill. Are you suggesting that in our proposal to the council that we put both of these options in and let the council decide, or do we eliminate the first option, option A, and except for the two additionals?
I would prefer the latter approach, but I mean, I didn't want to presume. I'm only telling you that.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be clear on what you're suggesting so that.
Yeah. So, yes, I think it would be better if the drafting team gave the council final document we all agreed on, rather than something with options that we can't agree on, but I didn't want to presuppose, you know. I don't know how strongly anybody might feel about option A.
I'm not following quite well, sorry.
Olga, are you looking at the document that inserted, the version with my edits?
No, I will open it.
Okay, open that. That's what we're working on. We're working off of that, but we've got the other one with your comments also open, at least I do.
Well, my comments are...
So, Bill, one question. The world is speaking right now.
Yes, sure.
If I can read option B correctly, so that we may end up more than 6 candidates, correct?
No.
B.
One from each stakeholder group makes 4, and up to 2 additional nominees, one from any stakeholder group and one from the NCAs. Elected by...
Okay, so I was wrong. I was reading one per stakeholder group. Okay, I'm correct.
I'm only trying to suggest, Wolf, that each stakeholder group, we should trust colleagues enough to say they go through their bottom-up process, they select the candidate. I mean, again, the final decision is going to be up to Peter and Giannis anyway, but let each stakeholder group know that they can at least put forward one name.
So Bill, four of the nominees would, in essence, be endorsed by the stakeholder groups, and we would assume from that it's a GNSO endorsement. And then the other two would be by a simple majority of each house.
Correct.
And also then, just one more thing. So, I mean... there may be more nominees than one from each stakeholder group, probably will be, It's up to the stakeholder group then to pick one of those that they would endorse. Any others could be considered in the other two nominations or
right.
endorsements. Yeah, okay.
Correct.
I'm clear on the thing.
Does that not work for anybody?
Sorry,
hi,
this is... for a moment. Which paragraph are you in, Bill?
We are in proposed one-time process for GNSO endorsement.
Okay.
Paragraph 1, endorsement requires. And, again, I was simply trying to offer an alternative to the notion that anybody to be nominated by GNSO would have to get simple majority of both houses, which I'm afraid could lead to politicalization and people being
yeah.
upset if their stakeholder group doesn't get one. And
yeah,
I just think it's better if we tell each stakeholder group, you have one to play with, and you can also put forward another person for one other slot, which will be then a competitive thing.
Now, what happens, and then I guess if a stakeholder group doesn't have one to endorse, they don't have to.
Well, that's right. And I was going to put in more language about, you know, the GNSO could nominate less than six if there aren't candidates, et cetera. But I kind of thought, isn't that obvious? I mean, we don't want to overthink
yeah,
things.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm sorry. I think I jumped ahead of Zahid.
Okay. Zahid.
Oh, no, hi. Yes, hi. Bill, I think that makes perfect sense because what you're doing is securing one sort of slot for sure for every SG. It'll reduce politicization, and then we can put two up for sort of election. I think that makes sense. Just one question. How would this sort of, just this sort of practically putting it forward, move for a prospective member within a constituency, say the IPC, the BC, or ISBC? How would they do this? Would they first, through the councillors, submit something to the GNSO? I mean, I'm just sort of saying flowchart for process. I'm a little confused about that.
Well, I think Zahid, that what would happen is that the nominees, first of all, apply through the ICANN process, and then from that process, each stakeholder group's going to have to pick a candidate or more than one that they would endorse.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay.
I have a question. I have a question, may I?
Yeah.
I mentioned in as a comment in the document I submitted. So the candidates are sending through the ICANN process, and then the GNSO selects them. That is not clear for me.
Again, we talked about this before you came on the call, Olga. The point is simply, ICANN has already set out a process for public understanding, so we can't really contradict it, or it's going to get complicated. So the flow has to be that people go send it to ICANN, ICANN sends it to the GNSO Council, to the GNSO Secretariat. The Secretariat then sends it to the stakeholder group, and presumably the stakeholder group or the Secretariat could let people know at that time that one has come in. I mean, you know. But it's going to have to flow consistent with what the ICANN has specified already. Otherwise, we have problems. But can I – I have one other question about this, and this is something – that maybe, Olga, you might not like, but I want to raise the point because I'm wondering if we're going to get pushback on it later. We've been trying to figure out how to treat NCAs fairly, and so in the configuration that I've put here, you would have a slot being designated as being from the NCAs. The only thing I'm wondering about is whether in the council or after the council agrees something, somebody might say, now, wait a minute, a stakeholder group that involves hundreds of people potentially gets to have one nominee, but you're guaranteeing for the NCAs, who are three people, one slot. And the point that I was wondering is, would it be sensible to phrase, I originally had written some language and I thought, well, maybe that's a problem. Would it be sensible to make that last category something like NCAs and any persons who don't fit naturally within one of the stakeholder groups.
Bill, I think...
Can I comment? Me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I disagree with you because non-com appointees are selected from the whole community. So stakeholders have many people. Well, the whole community has much more. So in that sense, this is why there are non-com appointees appointed to GNSO, to the board, to the CNSO, and to the ALAC. That's my answer.
Bill, put Chuck in the queue, please.
Please go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, first of all, Olga, it's my understanding that the NCAs are selected because they are independent and do not represent any particular group. So I don't think that your reasoning follows very well there. I think this would be a concern in the community. But let me suggest an alternative way to word this one. So we eliminate option A, okay, and our option is that each SG selects, endorses one nominee, okay, and then up to two additional nominees will be selected by a simple majority vote of each house, and just keep it that simple.
But see, then, Chuck, we don't even give the NCAs a leg up. I mean, I that worries me. I want to be fair to the NCAs without, at the same time, inviting a political firestorm about it.
But if you're going to give, I mean, your point is I think people are going to have great concern if three individuals get to select one of six candidates.
Right. Well, again, no, but they're not being selected by the three individuals. Anybody can submit their application.
Right.
The two houses are going to vote. So, for example, all three NCAs could apply, and then the two houses are going to vote by majority vote and select the person. Okay.
So you're suggesting are you suggesting then that one of the NCAs would be one of the six candidates?
Yes.
Oh, I don't think that'll ever fly. It's perfectly okay if they apply.
Well, this is why I was wondering if we could broaden the category as a reserved category for people who don't fit naturally within any one stakeholder group. I mean, there are other persons out there whose positioning in stakeholder groups has been a subject of some discussion by various people for various reasons. And then there's other people, like, look, Marco was saying they already had somebody apply today who didn't specify even an SOAC. I mean, you might have people who don't kind of see themselves fitting one of the four boxes. So
right.
I was asking the question, could we reserve one space for that miscellaneous grouping, which includes NCAs, and then have one space for a fifth person selected from stakeholder groups? If we don't at least specify that NCAs are, part of the mix there, that's not fair to them, because then they don't fit anywhere.
I don't understand what's not fair. If you have two open slots that will require a simple majority vote of each house, okay, NCAs can apply for those. It can be considered in those slots if they're not selected by one of the SGs. Anybody can. Why do we need to specify?
Because
I'm lost.
Okay. Well, it seems to me that if you suggest that one of those slots is held for people who don't fit one of those boxes necessarily, you're giving the NCAs a fighting chance to be selected. If you don't specify that and you just say that there's two open slots subject to majority voting in the two houses, you could easily end up with the two houses saying, well, then we want to put another one of our stakeholder group people into both of those slots.
Okay, let me take another stab then. Maybe I'm understanding a little bit better. So maybe we have one open slot like I'm talking about and another slot that is for candidates who don't fit any slot. We have to define what they don't fit, I guess. Not associated
right.
with an SG, maybe, or
exactly.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Exactly. That's all I'm trying to say, Chuck.
I think that's sounding okay to me. We just need to find the right way to word it. Does
okay,
that work,
sorry,
Olga?
Sorry?
Does that work?
Yeah, that works. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm sorry if I wasn't being clear about what I'm suggesting. I was just trying to find. A way to broaden that the definition of that slot, so that it doesn't become a political issue that people say you're reserving a slot for three people. If you have a slot that is for unaffiliated with SG, then people, I think, could probably deal with that better.
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Are you okay with that, Olga?
Yes.
Because otherwise it could become a political problem, and you don't want that either.
How about others? Is everybody else okay with that? So we'd have one slot that's open that would require – both of those extra slots will require a simple majority vote of each house, right?
That's what I was suggesting.
Yeah, and then one of them would be open for any volunteers that apply to ICANN.
Okay.
The second one would be restricted to those who are not associated with an SG.
Okay.
I like that.
So the wording again would be up to two additional nominees, one from NESG and one unaffiliated with NESG, will be selected by a simple majority of each house.
I would suggest a change in the first one. I wouldn't specify that it has to be from an SG. That it's an open slot, as long
okay.
as it, yeah. And in other words, then both of them could actually be independent if the council so decided.
Yes, that's right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So to reword then, I'll take out one from NESG and say, one of which shall be one. How do I say this? One of which shall represent persons unaffiliated. I'll wordsmith it.
Yeah, you can wordsmith it. You got the idea.
All right, I'll wordsmith it, and I'll send it back to you all after I do. Okay, then if we're okay with that, let me move on to the next line. Oh, wait, let me cross-check Olga's points on this paragraph. Number three, I think we're, yeah, she asked about via ICANN process. Okay, oh, no, that's earlier. Oh, here we go. The one independent NCSC, all right, that's fine. Agree with the additional comment. Okay, fine. All right, we're good. All right, then the next one, line two. Chuck, you had said something that I proposed in the edit, and this has to do with the diversity stuff. I changed your shoulds to shalls and tried to strengthen our commitment a little bit in this area, and I recognize this might be controversial, and so then we have to talk about it. But
I think it's more than controversial, but before we go there, item two that you deleted isn't needed anymore, so I agree with the deletion there, right? Assuming there are no volunteers who receive necessary votes, at least one volunteer should be endorsed from each house. That doesn't apply anymore, so that goes away like you did, right?
You mean option number five.
I'm looking at your red line. You deleted what I had proposed as number two, and I think that's fine.
Oh, okay. This could be changed from each SG, that thing. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I was just reading the text that remains, not the right column. Sorry. Okay, yes, that's fine. So back to the point. But, Chuck, if we do what I just suggested, why don't we flip forward just for one point? 1 second here. Your point, your suggestion five, was a mechanism to deal with situations in which the voting doesn't work out. That was anticipating that the two houses were voting simple majority on all of the seats. What I put in there instead is I put the proviso if option 1A is pursued. So shall I leave that text in there and just say for the two non-assigned slots?
I think that works.
Does everybody follow me?
Yes.
For the two slots that are not allocated to the SGs, the procedure is as follows.
Uh-huh. Number five.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Olga had a question on that, and Olga, yes, the intent was to have Andre as a third option break the tie if he's willing.
I mean, I don't know if he's comfortable with that. Maybe we should ask.
That's why I put the parenthetical there. Maybe we could ask him.
It does seem awkward. Another way of doing that, of course, is and I referred to this elsewhere, you suggested, and it makes sense as the first cut, to have this evaluation group that would actually, though, what am I saying? If we're doing this, if the stakeholders are each dominating one of the four, the evaluation group would only be ranking the two other people for the two other slots.
Yeah.
So I should clarify that when we get to the relevant point. But anyway, we could use the evaluation team to try to negotiate something. It does seem odd to put this all in the hands of Andre, although it may never happen anyway.
Well, I'm open to suggestions. I was just grasping for something that in case it's needed. Because there could still be a tie after number one and number two.
Yeah. This is why the voting stuff gets complicated. Just handing stuff to blocks and saying bottom up, you guys nominate the folks you want, avoids all this stuff. Once we get into the House's voting, then we're into kind of nightmare territory. But I don't know how else to deal with that.
Bill, do you want to send a message to Andre and see if he'd be willing to do that? If that would be too uncomfortable, or does somebody have another idea? We just need to do something to, in case that happens. It may not happen, but if it does, we have such a short time period, we can't, you know, afford to. We're not going to have time to go back and revisit it.
I think that if there is a team involved, it's much better, because if it's only Andre's decision, maybe it's a lot of responsibility for him, and maybe he's criticized after his decision, and it's not fair for him.
No, everybody else is casting a vote, you know, so giving him a chance to cast a vote, is that really so bad?
Oh, well, yeah, because he doesn't have a vote. Yeah, you're right. Well, yeah, maybe we can ask him.
I can't help wondering if, first of all, I really doubt for this first round that we're going to have so many bodies that this even becomes an issue. In a case where more than two people for those two slots get a majority vote, in that kind of circumstance, don't you think the council could just, kind of collaborate a bit to work out a compromise amongst themselves without specifying a whole set of requirements? You don't trust that, huh?
Oh, I don't know.
It may be easy or not. You never know, because it depends on the candidate what may happen.
Yeah. Or to have that event. I mean, if we have this evaluation team of one person from each stakeholder group plus one NCA in place to have done this ranking procedure for those two slots, to ask them to consult with their stakeholder groups in the same way as I specified later with regard to the gender and geographical distribution resolution of a problem, that they would go back and consult with stakeholder groups and others and then try to come back with a resolution that the council could agree to by a simple majority vote. Why don't we hold this point for now, and then we'll come back to it after we see that how I address that about the other issue.
Okay.
Is that okay, Chuck?
Yeah.
All right. Let's. Oh, actually, those points are right above it. Okay, sorry. I'm forgetting where I am. All right, so let me go back to the geographical and gender distribution thing and talk about the suggestion I made there, and it might apply to these two slots as well. So, Chuck, I guess you're going to have a problem with this, but I suggested no more than two volunteers shall be from the same geographic region. Volunteers must not be the same gender, and at least one-third of each gender shall be represented. Now, you want it to be should. So
well,
that's the first.
The only reason I did that, Bill, is because what if there aren't any and I'll be ridiculous here. What if there aren't any male applicants at all? So we don't
right.
fit anybody?
Again, I was kind of operating on the assumption that common sense
sorry,
would prevail.
I think that the problem is that if there are three male and not women.
Either way, yeah.
It may happen. The gender issue is always to try to empower women to participate. And having three women applying, I don't think that would be a big problem. But what do you do if you have only men? What do you have to select by obligation a woman that is not applying? That's
okay.
also...
Can I make a suggestion?
Okay, sure. Go ahead, Zahid.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. I'm just thinking maybe we could put some sort of carve-out or parenthesis in there or something, saying we're basically choosing from the lists that have been provided to us by ICANN for those people who applied. But if there's no one who's a female who's applied, then that's the end of the story. Or if there's no one from a certain geographical region, et cetera, diversity, then that's fine. So maybe we can just put the words in there, available from the list provided by ICANN, and that would be it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good suggestion. Because if there are no candidates. Yeah.
And also, Bill, what if there is a candidate who meets the gender or geographic criteria but doesn't meet the other qualifications? Do we accept them because they're of the right gender or the right geographic region?
No, we should.
Maybe there's a way of having a negative vote there. This is Zahid. Maybe it'd be a negative vote.
But, Chuck, seriously, what are the chances of we're talking about, again, the two slots, because the four are held to the stakeholder groups. The stakeholder groups are not going to nominate anybody who's unqualified. I think that's a reasonable bet.
Well, we're not talking about the stakeholder groups.
Right. I'm putting those aside. And for those two other slots, they're subject to majority voting of both houses. I can't imagine majority votes of both houses for a candidate who is not qualified simply because they're female. So I was assuming, or because they're from geographic distribution. So
right, that
I mean,
makes sense.
It's blatantly obvious in that case. But
I think I'm missing something then, because if what your number two and number three say with the shall is that we're going to have the mix that we're talking about. Even if there's a simple majority support of both houses for the candidates.
Well, I'm assuming that people will be reasonable. Maybe that's the wrong assumption.
you can tell I always look at worst cases so that we're covered. So
okay. The only problem, Chuck, is I started thinking that I have to spell out language for every possible scenario in which we... The people behave ridiculously, or where we don't actually have a pool of six candidates or whatever,
yeah.
Then the document becomes very long and complex, and then it starts to look like you're overthinking it and being anal retentive. I just kind of thought, these are the procedures that would work under normal circumstances. If you don't get six candidates in the first place, then obviously you're not going to have six nominees. If you don't have any female candidates, then you're not going to meet if nobody applies, if you don't have any female applicants, you're not going to meet the gender distribution, and so on. I mean, I think...
Yeah, and I think you and I are on the same page on that, but when you say shall, being very precise,
that doesn't
leave that option.
I'm
supportive of the balance. But, you tried to deal with it in number four, but I don't think there's time for number four.
I don't think there is either. And my point there was, as I said to you in email... I would anticipate that people would say, holy cripe, we don't want to go through that. And if they didn't behave reasonable in the first round, we would move quickly to get a second round resolution, because nobody's going to want to end up with no nominees or to miss the window or the timeline that they have to follow simply because they're behaving like, childish.
Well,
so,
I hope you're right.
you have much more experience in the council than I do, so I'm putting faith in rationality prevailing, and my guess is also that we're not going to be talking about enormous numbers of applicants in the first place.
Well, I
might be wrong.
Aubrey used to always, I was always the one that was too optimistic, and she would always bring me back to reality. I guess I'm playing that role now.
You switched. Okay. Look, I'm willing. I understand Chuck's concerns, and he's probably right. I'm willing, if others don't mind, to make the shall shoulds, because it gives us more flexibility. But I think that the council really should make a serious effort to strive to reach these goals, and I think we should make that clear to colleagues when we present the drafting team proposal.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
So I'll go back to should.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I'm not sure that resolves all possible questions, but let's just look at the process I put in four and see if it makes sense. If the diversity goals of 2 and 3 are not achieved in the initial round, the evaluation team will consult with the stakeholders and NCAs, review the candidate pool, and then present to the council an alternative mix that would meet the goals. The council would then vote on the new list with a simple majority of both houses required for acceptance. I could delete that last line if it makes people paranoid. I can't imagine us going through more than two rounds of trying to sort this out. But I just put that sentence.
Yeah, but I don't see, Bill, how do we go? Keep in mind the applications are coming through the ICANN process. And by the way, Marco, it seems to me we got a problem if you extend the application deadline to the 23rd, because we have to consider the candidates after the 18th. So I don't think the we have a gap again. If there are applications still coming in until the 23rd, and we have to submit our decisions on the 23rd, that doesn't work.
This is Marika.
Yeah,
Marco is no longer on the call, so you should probably drop him a note about that.
Oh, okay.
Hey, well, Marika, you take the point, right?
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, please.
No, I'm
okay,
just calling. I just joined. I didn't have didn't have email connectivity, so I'm catching up from Friday. Apologies.
Oh, okay. Hi. No, Chuck's right. There is a gap, a lack of a gap there. It might not turn out to be an issue, but it often is the case that people apply on the last day.
Yeah, very. And in this case, because of the short time frame and the fact that the GNSO process hasn't been defined, it's probably very likely.
Okay, Chuck, you're as chair, why don't you send Marco a note and ask for clarification, perhaps a gap of a day or two for us to work with or something?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll do that. But now let's look at your thing. How do we come up with new lists? Maybe because the stakeholder groups have to go back and reconsider their decision.
Well, that's right. I mean, again, and I'm open to any other way of doing this. I was just trying to think of a way that, you know, if you, let's say you ended up, despite having a pool of 10 or something, through the bottom-up process of stakeholder groups picking their one person and then the two other slots, you ended up with, you know, a whole bunch of white guys from the U.S.
Yeah.
You gotta have some means to then say, well, wait a minute, people, this isn't good. We got to go back and have a second look at this. And the only way I could think to do that was to say, okay, then the evaluation team, which includes a representative from each stakeholder group, will then revert back to their people and say, hey, look, we nominated so-and-so, they nominated so-and-so. Would we be willing to consider the person we had thought of as our second as our first instead, or so on? Try to do communication with each other and their stakeholder groups, work out a compromise, an overall balance that's more appropriate. And frankly, I would be happy to just say and let that be the decision, and you don't have to vote at all in the houses. But I just thought that maybe people might think that that's a problem. So that's why I put that in there.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't we probably move on from this one and give it some thought. I fully understand what you're trying to do there. We just, the big problem is the short window that we have to make it happen.
But isn't a short window a good thing? Because it focuses minds.
Yeah.
And forces people not to goof around.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Chuck, we have to send this out in 2 days. So,
yep,
I'll leave it like this for now, but I think we have to decide. If that mechanism doesn't work, then we need another one.
Yeah. I'm fine. Okay. We should be able to resolve it on the list, I think.
Okay.
And maybe your approach is the right one.
The Wolf, Zahid, anybody else have a thought on this before we move on?
You guys, this is Christina because of the little snow issue we had here. I didn't have electricity this weekend, so I'm trying to get caught up. What would be the single best thing for me to focus on?
Are you able to look at the document, Christina? Do you have a functioning computer in front of you?
Yeah. No, I have electricity now. I just haven't had it. So, you know, I know that there's a whole ton of emails, and I don't want to go through stuff that is not...
Okay, so you're not looking at the document then, right?
No, I just pulled up what I think is your revision. That's
what we're looking at.
Okay, all right.
So we're looking at line 4 of the first section on proposed one-time process.
And we're trying
to say if we don't get a decent gender and geographical distribution through the bottom-up process of each stakeholder group selecting one and then two others being an open vote, what do we do? And I was suggesting that the evaluation team would then revert back to consult with the stakeholder groups and NCAs and others and try to come up with an alternative pool which we could vote on, or we could just say whatever they come up with is fine. Bearing in mind, again, we're, as I said on the email list, we're not distributing gold here. And we may, you know, we may not even have that many candidates. And anyway, at the end of the day, we're not making the decision. Giannis and Peter are. So, you know, I hope that we don't over-politicize and overthink all this stuff. I'm just trying to set a mechanism to make sure that from whatever pool we do get, we get a proper gender and geographical balance.
Okay. Let me just make sure I'm clear that under that scenario, let's just say that you ended up getting, just to pick up on your phrasing, three white guys from the United States. Would we would then go back to all of the stakeholder groups or just three that had nominated white guys from the U.S. and say, okay, you guys need to kind of work it out amongst yourselves, but we can't have three white guys from the U.S.
I would think you go back to all of them because they all need to talk amongst themselves and work out some horse trading. And you know, it might be that somebody comes around and says, all right, look, we'll put this person up for next time, for the next review team, with an understanding that, you know, that we get some consideration because we withdrew him from this one. You know,
okay.
Horse trading.
Okay. Can I ask a clarification on what is number 3? Where it's at least one-third of each gender?
That was Chuck's wording. I think he means...
I was just saying, I missed a major scientific development over the weekend.
Yeah.
Well, we're thinking that we need some transgender people. I think the concept was that of a group of 6, there should be at least two women. I think that was
okay,
the idea.
Got it. All right.
Uh-huh.
Is there a better way of saying that?
Yeah.
I'll come up with something.
Okay. At least one-third of the pool should be from the minority gender, whatever.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on.
Okay, got it. Okay.
Okay, yeah. So let's go down to GNSO qualifications. Now, Chuck had put in full name, contact, and geographic region. I just asked a question. I mean, they have to submit a short CV. Can't we just assume these things are in there? I mean, I just feel like we're specifying a lot.
No, I mean, I actually think it would be, I mean, I don't think so, at least not from,
okay.
You know, because we're doing some outreach, and frankly, I think the more standardized we can have it so that, you know, line one is name, employer, you know, name, address, employer. Line two is geographic region of residence.
All right.
Da, da, da. The easier we can make it cross, 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 the better.
Yeah, as soon as you assume something, Bill, somebody will miss it, so.
All right, that's fine. I just sometimes I feel like we overthink everything, but I took out my questions. All right, so the next point, identification of financial ownership, that's fine. Christina, I suggested deletion of this item that I think you had put in from the IRT, identification of nominees' knowledge, expenses,
no,
and
no, no,
the trade
no, no. Yeah, no, no. That was not intended to be part of that. That was just to identify that for the purposes of the IRT, expertise in that particular area was very important. So that's why we asked the question. And if we have, if we think that there are particular areas of expertise may not apply to this one, may apply to the Security and Stability Review, those are the types of questions we can ask. So, no, that was not intended to be part of this at all.
Oh, fair enough then, so I take that out. All right, then we have the next question, and this is where Chuck and I have some different ways of looking at this, I think. Chuck had suggested that we have these, I listed it just as a bullet point of what they have to submit, basically, and he was putting it as a separate kind of quality that we would somehow identify. Now, the question was, what I put in here was to just say they submit a 1-3 paragraph statement about their knowledge of and participation in the GNSO community and its structures and operations. Chuck had suggested some other language they would what happened to it? Chuck's language disappeared. Did I do something wrong here?
It depends how you format your
right. Mind. No, it's... Yeah, no, it's down here in the bottom in the blue box. All right, now Chuck had suggested that we have to mention availability and willingness to commit time. I mean, I can't help thinking anybody who submits submits an application doesn't need to be told that they need to have the time and the willingness.
I think this is a pretty significant. I mean, I agree with you generally, Bill. I just think that in this particular instance, from everything I've heard, we're talking about a much greater time commitment than perhaps any other working group, drafting team, whatever, that's been done so far. And I think it really can't hurt to kind of hit people over the head with it.
I mean, Bill, we've already had people express interests that are involved in tons of things in the GNSO, and I'm not sure that works.
Well, but... Chuck, don't we have to assume that people are adults and that they know their own schedules, and if they're involved in other things and they want to do this, that they then reorganize themselves and recalibrate in order to do it? I mean, as just the former professor, I feel like we're sort of like giving a lot of very detailed instructions to people as if they couldn't reason. I don't know. I don't feel strongly about this. I just think it's a little bit pedantic.
I think some way we need to emphasize the point that this is a serious time commitment I would hate to get into a situation where the GNSO endorsed member of a review team didn't have the time to do the job.
Of course. But I would think that any rational human would, if they don't have the time to do the job, wouldn't put their name forward.
And you assume that all humans are rational, right?
But you guys
I don't know how much time
this is going to take. I mean, can we put at least in the statement, it's anticipated that members of the review team will spend 10 hours a week, 300 hours a year. I mean, whatever. But I do think we need to have some quantitative information because, frankly, I'm getting asked by people, and I have no idea what to tell them other than a lot. Well, you know, a lot could be 10 hours or 50 hours depending upon what your point of reference is.
Sure, Christina
this is right. I agree with you. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. There should be something there. Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, but we're not in a position to say what it's going to involve, really.
Well, then we need to tell us, can't we? I don't mind
to restore the line. They should have availability and willingness to commit the time, but that doesn't solve your problem. We don't have any way of knowing ex ante what's going to be involved, really.
I don't think there's a perfect solution, Bill, but I'm with Zahid and Christina that, you know, it's probably better to leave that in there. It doesn't probably solve the problem either.
Okay, fine.
Can I say something?
Sure.
I think that we should ask for something that they will commit the time for a commitment or something like that in written. It would be good to know how much time, that we don't know yet. But I'm not sure that we have to go and ask what they do with their time and their agendas. I think that's not our goal. I don't think that's fair for people. I think we're all professional adults, and also people will be selected by their stakeholder group. And if they are not from a stakeholder group or they are non-com appointees or from community, there are many ways to get and check the information that they're providing. We shouldn't be surprised by someone saying that he is responsible or she is responsible and they are not at the end.
Right. I certainly agree with that. I don't think we should be condescending in this. Can we move on? I'll put the availability and willingness to commit the time back. Demonstrated trustworthiness to function neutrally and objectively. I mean, Chuck, how are we going to evaluate that, really?
Well, I actually suggested some ways to do that, if I can find them. Where's my comments? Maybe I have to go back to my document.
I have it here. It says, this can be measured by asking candidates to list and briefly describe actual instances where they have demonstrated this qualification.
But that would, like, for example, what do you do with somebody who is a member of the GNSO community but has never been on the council? What opportunity have they had to demonstrate neutrality and whatever?
I think all of us are in situations like that often. It doesn't have to be in the GNSO. That's related to an interviewing technique that I learned in a course years ago in hiring, is that you ask, rather than ask people whether they're neutral, which obviously they're going to say they are, just ask them to share an example in a situation where they needed to be neutral and they did it. You know, it's not perfect, nothing is, but you're trying to have some information that you can use in that regard.
Here's what I worry about, Chuck. I think, for example, of NCSG. We've got members from around the world, okay? Not all of whom will necessarily immediately understand what you're driving at from their cultural and whatever background. And let's say somebody who's very smart applies and NCSG puts them forward. Not for the one of the four slots, but for the other two. We're going to then tell them that they have to find some way in their application to explain something that might not have any real bearing to their lived on their lived experience. I mean, it just strikes me as kind of problematic to add this kind of thing. If others feel strongly, it's fine. But I think it's problematic.
I'll defer to the group on this. I'm not going to push it because you know it's very similar to the ICANN AOC qualification E above.
Right, exactly. ICANN already says this. So
yeah,
why do we have?
How do we measure it? I guess it's a problem. But that's all right. I'll defer to the group on that.
Hi, this is Ari. Can I say?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering, maybe a compromise to this was the earlier suggestion that we should have something there saying this is the number of hours generally, and it may be more, that you're required to basically work and devote time to it. Now, one of the ways we could compare it, and Christina, I don't know, maybe you can help us with this, and being on the IRT, both of us knew that there was a lot of time that was devoted. So maybe we could take metrics from there and sort of, you know, do some sort of thing, a number of hours per week or hours per month, and we just put that in there. Maybe staff can help us sort of come up with those or something. Would that be practicable, or is it so difficult that we can't actually, you know, come up with those figures? And then that could be the statement saying, if you want to do this, this is the number of hours you're going to have to put in. and, you know, you have to say, yes, you are able to do so.
I like the idea, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what, just to give you guys an idea, we told people for the IRTs that during the eight-week period, you had to be able to commit 15 business days.
How many?
We expected 15 business days.
Okay.
It actually
right.
ended up being much more than that. But
yeah, exactly.
You know, as a practical matter, you had to say, you know, because that's 3 weeks out of 8 weeks. That's a pretty significant time commitment. Having said that,
right.
I think it was helpful to make sure that everybody went into this with their eyes open about what the time commitment was going to be.
So we could mention those sort of numbers.
I think we're pulling numbers out of the hat, though, Zahid.
Yeah.
Nobody really is going to – Nobody. I mean, staff isn't going to be able to tell us what this is really going to involve. Nobody's going to know. We could say 10 hours a week, but, I mean, willingness, availability and willingness to commit at least 10 hours a week, but we don't know whether that's really accurate or not.
Well, it'll be a minimum, right, at least. It'll be a minimum. But we know this is going to take longer than that.
Do you people want me to say, I mean, and then we should revert back to the other point we were talking about, to commit at least 10 hours per week during the review period?
Yeah, with a reference that this amount of hours may be changing or
right.
different.
This may just scare people off from applying rather than anything else, but I don't have a problem. I think that's probably a fair guess, at least 10 hours,
well,
right?
We could clearly say this has never been done before. This is a first-time process, but best
yeah.
guesses are, or, you know, a previous experience in certain such reviews have disclosed that minimum 10 hours have been allocated by people, or, you know, and this could well be more. Some language
okay.
about it.
And, in fact, I think they do give some information that there's probably some meetings that are going to take longer and even have public observing or something. So, yeah, I think that's a
sure.
minimum, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
But I mean, you know, do we have to start repeating all of the whole ICANN text explaining these things? And
no.
I mean, do you want me to just say at least 10 hours per week during the review period, or do you want me to add plus face-to-face meetings and blah, 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 too? I mean,
I go with
that.
I don't
yeah.
know.
Plus participation in face-to-face meetings, et cetera.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, I will send this back to you all. But now back to the point we were on, demonstrated trustworthiness to function neutrally and objectively. I don't mind, you know, personally, I mean, I don't mind saying that that's a quality we look for, but I'm not comfortable with the council trying to specify a methodology to evaluate that or to require that people attest to it personally.
Well, I think we're going to, you know, we will in our decisions when we, whether it's an SG endorsing a candidate or a in the two seats,
right.
we will obviously try to evaluate that, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean that will be part of the conversation, Chuck. Right, for those two slots, people are going to. If somebody's a complete lunatic, somebody's going to say that. You know.
Yeah, if we have enough information about them to know.
Well, if we can't find any good information about somebody, it's going to be awful hard for them to get a simple majority vote of both houses.
Yeah. By the way, let me share something that happened that definitely relates to what we're talking about. I was contacted via email last week by a former Indiana Supreme Court justice wondering how you get endorsed by the GNSO. And I mean, the guy looked very qualified, and you know, it could really do a very good job with this. Okay. Do we, I mean, is a candidate, I mean, that could be somebody that we would consider for the open slot or whatever, you know, and I offered to talk to him on a phone call just if he had some questions. But that's the kind of thing that may come up for us in this, so.
Did he have a background in antitrust?
You know, his resume wasn't that clear, but he did send me his resume and everything, and so you know, I encouraged him to apply, but you know,
okay.
I told him, and that's why I said, you know, when we get to the next one, Bill, on GNSO knowledge and so forth, you know, it really does seem beneficial to have some basic understanding, not an insider, of the GNSO, so that they can at least keep the record straight when the teams are doing their review and their analysis.
Let's turn to that now. So, Chuck, what I put was 1-3 paragraph statement about their knowledge of and participation in the community. You had said that they should demonstrate basic knowledge of the community, same thing, but then you had suggested we could try, you know, some process by which we would try to provide an orientation or tease things out and so on. And the only point I guess I was reacting to is, again, I wonder if we're not sounding a bit like schoolmarmish if we start, you know, specifying all this stuff. Wouldn't it be sufficient to just say, person, they should write a statement of 1-3 paragraphs, let's say 3 paragraphs, about their knowledge of GNSO and what goes on and their involvement? 2-3 paragraphs.
Would it be okay to add to that their understanding of the domain name industry?
Yeah,
well,
other than say, I understand the domain name.
Well, that's what I thought. I mean, Christina, you know, I mean, anybody who's applying for this gig then, even if they don't know jack about the domain name industry, they could probably sit down and, like, you know, look at a few websites, pull out a few lines and say, here's what I know about domain names. On what basis are we going to turn them down or say anything, you know?
Yeah. But I'm okay with what you propose, Bill. We don't need to belabor this.
Can I make a suggestion, though, Bill? I like your language. But I think that what I would like to have in there, and I would hope that most people will pick that up from what you said, but I would really like to see, you know, a list of what they've been involved in. In other words, rather than saying, you know, I've participated in several working groups, that doesn't really help us, because then we have to go reach out to staff and say, okay, you know, does this name ring a bell?
Okay. A 2-3 paragraph statement of their knowledge of and details of their participation in the GNSO community.
And its structure and operation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
okay?
Helpful. Now, a question going back to the Indiana Supreme Court justice. You know,
There
may be candidates that really haven't had any involvement. I don't know that we necessarily should eliminate those. But at least be good to know. And so
actually,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was interrupting. Go ahead, Chuck.
No, I'm done. That's good.
Okay, actually, you know, I laughed, but I was stupid to laugh. That could be a very good person.
Yes, that's what I thought.
You know, I mean, for an accountability and review team. Accountability and Transparency Review Team, to have some, you don't necessarily have to be an absolute wizard of the working of the registry, registrar, separations, and so on, in order to try to evaluate the procedures by which I can operate, so whether they're fair and due processy and so on. And it may well be that a sort of outside expert with a different tool kit of skills would be very useful.
Exactly, and that's what hit me when I got this message, and that's why I brought it up. And so I wonder if we should add to that, if you haven't had any significant involvement in the GNSO, and then we need to fill in what we want. I made some suggestions in my comments there that maybe we, you know, ask them how they would become familiar or provide, like I suggested, I think, maybe we're willing to provide an orientation just so that they have some basic concepts. I don't know what the right answer is there, but I kind of think that we shouldn't just automatically exclude people just because they don't have any involvement.
Okay. But I was framing it as things that they should put into their application rather than our background understanding. So what would we ask them if this is not... If if you lack this background, provide X. I mean,
I don't know, but the way it stands right now with what you asked for there, it's going to communicate, you know, what does somebody do if they don't have any involvement?
Okay.
Do they just not apply? Or
no.
Do we leave the door open there a little bit? And how do we do that? And I don't have the magic answer. But
okay.
You know
how
what
about
I'm saying?
If I add a bullet in the event of no participation or something like that in the GNSO, a description of general qualifications of relevance to an accountability and transparency review team.
That helps.
I'll send it to you guys, and you can wordsmith it, Chuck. We have to send this out to the council on Wednesday. We've got another day to whatever to play with. So let me just send it back to you, and if anybody wants to clean up the wording, then we'll do it then. Okay?
Okay. Good progress. Thanks, Bill.
So the only big outstanding question I see, sorry, we're going over here. Do people want to just give some more thought to the mechanism that I tried to lay out for what do we do if we don't get the gender and the geographic diversity, this notion of the evaluation team, having a look, and then we'll talk about it on the email list. And then there was one other point, Chuck, you had pointed out that we should take up, which was Caroline and Tim had raised the question of whether counselors should be disqualified.
I'm on the call, by the way. Sorry, Bill.
Okay. So does anybody have any views on that matter?
I don't see why. Why the Chuck, can you explain why?
Oh, well, Caroline's on, she just said, right?
Yeah, I'm on, yeah.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know.
Well, I mean, we kind of had this discussion on the list that, you know, those people that are, I mean, I think Chuck, for example, had given himself as an example, you know, as GNSO chair, he did not think he would have the time or the resource capacity to also act as a member of the review team. So just a matter of practicality. I mean, Chuck and I saw your comment earlier about could I suggest language, and sorry I didn't get back in time to do that before the call, but, you know, I was wondering if we could sort of tackle it under the qualifications section where we talk about commitment to devote time to the review process. I mean, depending on how we all feel about it, would it be maybe a good idea to add a guideline comment there saying something along the lines of applicants that hold existing leadership positions within the GNSO are unlikely to be considered for candidacy or something like that. So, you know, not strictly ruling it out, but at least flagging to people, you know, if they do have leadership positions, and, you know, I'd even consider the NOMCOM people as well to be in the same boat, and that this is something that they should consider.
So the issue is the time available. That would be the problem. Or is there another thing that prevents GNSO counselors from participating as review team members?
I think it's probably more of an optics issue. So to me, if the whole idea is to have kind of this not completely external review process, to what extent do we make that a goal to make that review more difficult if everybody that goes forward from the GNSO is a GNSO counselor, or any of them for that matter? I don't know. I'm not completely. To me, it's not just a time issue. For me, it's also kind of an optics concern.
Yeah,
I'll give my view would be that I don't think there's an optics concern, and that if we were to prohibit either counselors or people in leadership positions ex ante, we could end up with a very thin and underinformed applicant pool, number one. Number two, people are adults, and why would we be making prejudging how people do or don't manage their time and allocate their time? It depends on somebody's work position. somebody who's got a 9 to 12 job or whatever it is, maybe they don't got the time to do this seriously. Then they ought to be an adult enough to know not to apply. Somebody who has a more flexible job structure that allows them to allocate the time that's required, why would we preclude them because of their affiliation? I mean, I don't understand personally the argument for making those judgments for other adults.
I agree with you.
But that's not a time issue. That's why I really think for me it's more of an optics issue. But, you know, I think we'll just have to, you know, it may come out that it works itself out within the stakeholder groups. You know, so
the stakeholder
groups don't intentionally put forward counselors. And then, you know, we can go from there.
Right.
I don't know about other questions when we're done.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I don't know about you guys, but I suspect, for example, in NCSG, that none of the counselors will want to do this because it is too much at the same time for us, and that we have plenty of other people who are qualified. And so we wouldn't even want to try to presume. That'd be my guess. I think people will work this out within their communities and within their own conscience about what they're able to handle.
But there are a small number of people who do like to be plugged in absolutely everywhere over the, you know, throughout the community and different processes. And, you know, back to Christina's comment about optics, I do think it's worth at least calling it out or giving some sort of guideline.
Well, with the process, and you probably missed some of this, Caroline, with the process that we've moved to now, with each SG endorsing one candidate of the applicants, and then a council simple majority vote of each house endorsing the other two more open seats, we would each, as you know, be able to use criteria like that in our endorsement votes or however that happens. Either
that's right.
The SG or the council.
Yeah, if the registry wants to adopt an internal rule that we're not going to put forward any counselors, they can do so.
Yeah.
There's nothing to prohibit that. But for us to specify at the council level, I mean, the only thing, I don't want to belabor this either, Caroline. The only thing I would say is, you know, what you said before about people being involved in stuff. It sounds to me like we're penalizing them for being engaged in ICANN. You know, like if they've committed and participated, then that disqualifies them for doing something they want to do. That strikes me as an odd formulation too.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not going to die in the ditch over this, but I do think it's worth calling it out somewhere, or at least putting it in people's minds, and then leaving it to the SGs to kind of bear this in consideration themselves. But, yeah, you know, I take your point, and I did catch some of the process conversation earlier on that this is something that could be addressed at SG level. I mean, perhaps you could say something like commitment to devote his or her time to the review process with due consideration to existing leadership positions, something like that.
That seems to me to be targeting a small number of people.
Yes, I don't agree with that.
And presuming that they're incapable of making that judgment. I couldn't support that. I don't know about anybody else.
No, I don't support either.
I mean, I think we need to. Probably the reality is going to be it's going to be hard to get good people to do this stuff. And I think I think putting up more and more barriers to entry might be like suicidal. In reality, we might have less than six applicants. We might get three. Then what do we do? I mean, three qualified.
I have two questions when we're ready for another topic.
Please go ahead.
The first one being, Bill, I'm curious as to why you took out the date the nominee would be representing any other party or person through his or her AOC review team participation, and if so, identify that party or person. I think it's
Where was this?
It looks as if, well, it originated from IRT language, but it looks as if it morphed into basically a state if the nominee would be representing any other party or person through his or her AOC RT participation, and if so, identify that party or person.
Because the whole presumption, I mean, we've submitted a text to the public comment period and had an understanding, I thought, amongst ourselves that people that we put forward to participate in the review teams are not there to represent any given stakeholder position, much less an individual or client. So I wouldn't expect that this is really, you know, I mean, that's not going to be applicable in most, anybody, they're not there to do that. That's not, I took it out and nobody objected. If others would like to return to the issue and say that it's problematic, then let's do that.
I personally, I think it's helpful in there just to rule out the possibility.
Because that way you either have people saying publicly, no, I'm not representing anyone else, and it's in writing, or they're saying, yes, I am.
And actually, that comes back to the neutrality, too.
Right. I just think it would be helpful to have in there. I very much agree with you that I hope that by the time people get up to the level being considered by the SG, that it's abundantly clear to everyone that you are not to do this in a representative capacity of any particular party or person. But nonetheless, I just think that it's helpful to make people answer the question.
I don't think there's any harm in putting that in there, is there?
It sounds to me like we're talking about a contractual negotiation or something. I'm not a lawyer, but I'll put it back in. I deleted it, and we said okay, so now I have to go find the language. But I'll put it back in. I have Chuck's original version.
All right, thanks. I appreciate it. So I think it also covers things that wouldn't necessarily be captured by financial ownership or senior management interests. You know, it identifies potential conflicts that wouldn't be encapsulated by that other language. So. And then the other question I had is just so it's not clear, and I'm happy to do this on the list. But Chuck, given the example of the retired judge, would it be everyone's view that they would have to come in to the process through an SG, and if so, which one?
Well,
no.
There's two ways. Go ahead, Bill.
No, this is before you got here. The formula that we were suggesting was that the four slots are bottom up. SG selects one. Then there's two slots that will be open for open to be voted by majority, simple majority of both houses. One of which would be specified as being for people who are not affiliated with any one particular SG. And so such a person would presumably be considered for one of those two slots to be voted by a simple majority.
Okay.
And so they could certainly get a full hearing, and they would have to be somebody that's a consensus person, because they're not representing a particular, they're not being put forward by a stakeholder group. Does that answer your question or no? I don't know. Maybe.
It does. That was very helpful. Thank you.
And, Bill, when it's appropriate, there are a couple logistical issues I'd like to raise.
Go for it, Chuck, and then we should wrap up.
Yeah. First of all, should we maybe have a doodle done? I don't think we're going to need another call, but just in case we do, I think we're pretty close. But we may want to have Gisela or Glenn do a doodle, I don't know, for late tomorrow or I don't know, I guess it can't be too late tomorrow. We're all in different time zones. But the more important thing, Marika, are you still on?
No, Marika's dropped off.
Okay. Well, I wonder, Bill, if it would be helpful, and you as leader of this group maybe can decide this and decide whether you want to do it. There's several action items that we're going to have on Wednesday to get out right away. You could probably, if you like, unless you want to do it yourself, is ask Marika if she could draft some proposed language that she could vet on the list for some of those communications, communication to the council, communication to the community, and so forth, part of our action plan.
We're back on the no later than 10 February line.
Right. Some of
the
action items
there
are going to require some communications that need to be drafted.
It's Margie. I'm here if you want me to follow up and tell me what you need me to do.
Oh, fantastic, Margie. Thank you. Please, yes, do.
You repeat, and I'll take notes. And
I'll send you the I'm going to clean up this text. I'll send it back to everybody, and I'll send you a note to Margie calling your attention to the operative paragraph number 5. Okay?
Okay. Terrific.
Thanks, Margie.
Right. And as far as a call tomorrow, Chuck, I will be at the UN all day, and I can't make it. I could make a call on Wednesday, but by then we're already sending it out. I'm wondering, do we need another discussion? As far as I could tell, we are pretty darn close here. The only thing that is up for grabs, I think, is the lack of resolution on my suggested mechanism for dealing with gender and geographic.
Yeah,
right?
I think we'll be able to work through it, Bill. I think you're right.
So most of the people in the drafting, there are other people in the drafting group who are not on this call, so they're going to need to look at that anyway. Well, I'll clean this up. I'll send this to the list, and hopefully we can get everybody to respond on that. And if somebody has an alternative formulation, I'm certainly open to it. Okay?
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Anything else? Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna.